Hello and welcome to Inside the School District, a weekly discussion providing you with relevant news, recent developments, and must-have information about what's happening inside the Mat-Su School District.
I'm Emily Forshner with Big Cabbage Radio. It's the third Tuesday of the month, and this is Inside the School District. And with me today is Superintendent Dr. Randy Traney. Well, Dr. Traney, tell me something good.
Something really great is that Thursday we're going to have the ribbon cutting for the new Houston High School.
Ooh, what time does that happen?
I believe it's 10 in the morning. It's morning. I was out there yesterday. Staff members were in there, you know, moving equipment in and trying to get their classrooms set up. It's an amazing facility. It's going to change that community. It's going to be a highlight of everybody's day. So if you get a chance, come out Thursday morning.
So students come back today.
Students are back today. They should be hitting the halls for the first time soon. They're going to be stunned. Like, they're going to just be amazed at how
beautiful
it is.
Yep. And they're being prepped because they're going to be the hosts of the open house.
Yep. The governor will be there. The mayor of the borough will be there. Of course, you know, school people and district office people. And then there'll be maybe a half hour, 45 minute kind of everybody in the gymnasium. And then the students will give tours for like half hour, 45 minutes of the building.
So you've been in there. You've seen the energy and the activity. What impresses you most about that school?
You know, there's so many things. For one thing, it still has the character of the old building. It's generally laid out the same way. And so I think that's going to make people comfortable who were used to that building for a long time, since the 80s. But it is a dramatic upgrade on the other building. It feels so open and airy. The views out of all the classrooms is pretty amazing. Like, it's really amazing. And then the gym facility, that community is just going to just eat that up. They're going to love it. It's really impressive.
And the music room. I know music is very important to Houston, and they had their choir room right behind the...
Yep. I stuck my head in the music room yesterday, and chairs were set up and all of the stands for putting their music on. It looked like a music room. When I was there a month ago, it was a pretty empty building still. Now it looked like a school yesterday.
So the old high school is now the new junior high.
Yeah.
And it's been overcrowded and kind of multi-purpose for these years as construction went on. Is that building going to have any upgrades?
Yep. There's, I know it's over $1 million worth of upgrades. And, of course, you aren't going to see those right now because it's been overfull and overcrowded. And so they'll finish out the rest of this year, and this summer all of those upgrades will happen. And so it's going to have a really nice refresh too when it's done. New floor coverings, new wall paint.
What about all the portables? What happens to those?
The portables, I always use the analogy of the portables are kind of like breadcrumbs that you throw out into the ocean around seagulls. Everybody wants one. And there has been a long process for a needs assessment of where they should go. And they're all scheduled to go to different places around the borough. So some of them actually stay there, like I think mm-hmm. three, and the rest get distributed to the other schools. Some of those portables came from other schools right after the earthquake, and so they were told that they would get their portable mm-hmm. back whenever this event was finally over with, and it's taken 4+ years.
Yeah. Well, another thing about what happened today when the students went back to Houston High School is they rode buses. So the bus strike has ended,
mm-hmm.
and I'm wondering what tire marks have been left from this strike. What's been different, and where do those skid marks lead us?
Yep. So, you know, you've heard me say this lots of times, never waste a good crisis. So that was certainly a crisis, and we got to learn a lot. So we know that one of the immediate things is there were some students who didn't come to school at all, a very small percentage, and then a larger amount of students who were impacted, they didn't get to come as often. And so we're looking at ways to maybe do an extended summer session for kids who want to come. Right now our plan is, not a plan, right now the idea, the draft idea is 2 weeks. And we're trying to flesh that out and see what that looks like. You know, and this wouldn't be like our normal summer school. This would just be like extended time for all kids to come if they wanted to.
So we're on rotating bus schedules now. Is that because we don't have enough drivers?
Yep. It's during the strike, as you can imagine, if, you know, everybody's trying to pay their bills and you go on strike for a month, some people found other work is what happened. So we had got right up to that where we had the threshold number of drivers. That number is actually about 150 drivers is what we need. That's kind of the minimum. And that accounts for when you have 150 people, some are sick on any given day, right? Or they have leave. And so you have to have, we actually have enough drivers to run all of the routes if every single person was here every single day. So, well, that's not reasonable. So you try to get to 150. I heard yesterday that we're back up to 142. And there's 8 drivers who are in, like, the queue somewhere in their training. So we're hopeful that in the next few weeks we'll be back to the 150 number and we can return to full service.
Before the strike was settled, there were a couple of ideas being tossed around of how to, like, shift our idea of what school transportation looks like. Yep. What happened to those ideas?
Yep. So the one that we're really keyed in on right now, working with folks at the borough, the planners at the borough, because they have a problem as well that they need to start providing public transportation. And I'm not sure of all the intricacies on this, but it's because we're now a class one something. And anyhow, they have a new burden to provide public transportation, and they have some money that they're using to try to make that plan. And so we met with those folks 2 weeks ago, I guess now, and we're developing an overlay map. I actually have a version in my office right now where it has the entire map of the borough, and then it has an area around each school blocked out in a mile and a half radius, because by Alaska law, that's you're supposed to pick – those kids are supposed to be able to get to school by themselves. So we've drawn that, and now we're overlaying a density map of students and all of the current bus stops, and we're trying to plan a different routing system that could also play into public transportation. So it's that idea that I talked about where instead of the door-to-door service we have a much longer, like the routes run all day long, as an example, from, say, 6 in the morning till 6 in the evening, and the bus just drives around in circles over and over and over and over again. And so they're using their ArcGIS system to try to predict where the best spot for those stops would be. And then they have to overlay that with borough land and availability of electricity. And anyhow, it is exciting. It could change things. And then I think what else we've learned, and you're seeing this right now, like we're rolling bus cancellations right now, but only for the core, because we're figuring out that we can differentiate more than we have been. So maybe this new public transportation system, you know, we start small. We start in the core, not out in Reddington and Glacier View, obviously.
Would this idea of changing the routes, would that change any boundaries?
I haven't thought of that, and that hasn't come up in any of our conversations. I don't think it would change any boundaries. You know, some of the obvious bus stops are the schools themselves. That's a very safe spot. So if you were a parent and you happen to drive by a school on your way to work, you could drop your kid off there and they could get on the bus system now.
Right.
So that's one of the obvious spots for bus stops. And then the borough's looking at other available places where we might build bus stops.
Would this happen next year or would this be...
You know, I don't know if it will happen next year. It wouldn't be on any grand scale next year, maybe we could find we try to think of schools as like systems, right? Mm-hmm. Like there are some schools that feed Palmer High School.
Right, the Palmer system, the Wasilla system.
And then there's some in the middle that, you know, that get really messy. It's the messy ones that are kind of the problem. Yeah. Like we might be able to do it with a Palmer. We might be able to start something next year. As an example, I don't want all the people in Palmer to think, oh, it's coming, because maybe it'll be Wasilla. I don't know. I'm just saying it would most likely be one of those discrete school systems where these elementary schools feed this middle school, feed that high school.
This is Big Cabbage Radio, and I'm talking with Superintendent Dr. Randy Traney about news inside the district. Well, Dr. Traney, we were just talking about buses and the consequences of the strike and where we are and a lot that we don't know. Well, let's go more about what we don't know and talk about Juneau. So, Juneau, the legislative update. We don't know where the BSA is. Nope. We don't know about anticipated pension or dedicated contributions. We don't know how that's going to go. We do know there is a teacher shortage. And we don't know what impact Governor Dunleavy's proposed bill on parent rights will do with the district. Now, the district has already made it clear that LGBTQ bathroom issues are segregated and that transgender will not be on girls' sports. We know those two things.
Mm-hmm.
What else is impacted in the borough with governor's parent rights bill? And we don't know.
Yeah.
But
it's a really hard question. The two that you named, we already know how that's working in our district. I don't know that the other part of parents' rights, I guess it was just going to take to see, like, if it passes, mm-hmm. What the regulations are around it. I really don't know what it would look like. It's funny. I know we touched on this briefly before. There's so many unknowns out there. You mentioned the BSA. Well, another one is the transportation.
Right.
It's totally unknown. I'm working with the other big five superintendents. We're getting them all of our data for this year about all the transportation needs that we were unable to fill and what that actually would have cost. It's another huge, big unknown. We don't know if that's going to change. It hasn't changed in longer than the BSA. It's a really awkward situation because we have to make our budget before we know any of these things and try to plan for next year.
Every school board meeting, you have Eldon Mulder mm-hmm. and Ben Moore
yep.
report, and they'll be reporting again tomorrow?
Yep, they will be. It's great having them down there. I think the thing that's going to happen with so many of these different, like the governor's bill, the transportation, mm-hmm. The BSA, the other bill that the governor floated with the $5,000 per
teacher.
And the $10,000 if you're rural but on the road system and $15,000 if you're really remote per teacher with a classroom roster. That's a giant unknown. So all of that stuff is going to come down, I believe, to, you know, that kind of horse trading that happens in Juneau on the very last days of the session. So we're going to remain in the dark for a long time, I'm afraid.
You're not going to tell us what's in the crystal ball?
I haven't. I honestly don't, because I've been down to Juneau twice, and we talked to Ben and Eldon, regularly, a couple times a week. You go from one office and you'll take an example like the BSA, one office, you can walk in and you'll be like, it's going to be $1,000 at least, and it's going to be $1,357 next year. And then you go to the very office next door, and with as much certainty as you just heard it was going to be $1,000, you hear, it's not going to be anything this year.
We're going to put it
off till next year. So I have no idea where it's going to land.
Do you think the parent right bill is going to suck the oxygen out of the other issues?
I
know that's an opinion, but...
Yeah. No, what I think what I think will what you'll see happen is there's going to be compromise on all of those bills. I think that's what we're seeing right now. People floating kind of bills that are opposite or different, maybe not opposite, different from each other, different priorities, and then that they will do their trading and bargaining at the end. BSA is important for some folks. Parents' rights are important for other folks, and they're going to arrive at the middle somewhere.
And you have a joint borough assembly school board meeting coming up.
Mm-hmm.
And what can listeners expect from that meeting?
Right now in borough code, and it sunsets after this year, I believe, the borough manager has sent us a letter saying that, here's how much money the district would get at 6.3 mils, and that's in code. There was really no decision on his part. That's what he had to do. And then we have built our preliminary budget on 6.3 mils, and our board will recommend that or not at Wednesday's board meeting. And I presume that that's what they're going to recommend. That's just kind of the matter of course, the way it's been going. And then at that joint borough assembly meeting, I imagine that will be one of the topics about really whether it will be 6.3 mils or not. And then going forward, since it sunsets, since the 6.3 mils sunsets, it'll be interesting to see what happens in the future at the borough level. There's one other, if you want to listen to a joint borough board assembly meeting, we're going to have a really great presentation on all of our CTE options around the district. I was going through it with Trish Sugg yesterday. It really is an impressive, impressive array. And if you've ever met Trish, she is not a CTE advocate. She is the CTE advocate for the state of Alaska, really on the West Coast or maybe the country. She's amazing. She's going to have a 10-minute conversation about CTE. I bet it stretches to 20 or 30 because people are going to be so interested. They're going to want her to talk more, and she can definitely talk a lot about CTE.
She is excited about it.
Yeah, she's really excited.
That's been one of the things you wanted to grow when you came in, and that with the rigorous AP curriculums, but also CTE. How much has the CTO program grown?
That first year I was here, it plummeted because if you remember in the high school, it's especially high school secondary, though, we changed the schedule to try to minimize student contact. And it really cut the number of CTE internships in half. So for those CTE career technical education courses and the internships that go with them, those were really devastated in COVID. And then the next year, it was the highest amount we've ever had. So, we rebounded very, very quickly because we had all this infrastructure. It was just a CTE. It was just a COVID anomaly. And then this year is higher than last year.
And that encompasses anything from construction to welding, mechanics to computers to cooking to everything.
Yeah. Everybody thinks about CTE and they think about those, the welding and the construction. But it is all those. It's fire science. It's dental hygienist. It's your nursing certificate, your teaching certificate. It's really a really, really robust program, and it's not just at Career Tech High School.
Right.
It's at every single one of our secondary schools. We have CTE stuff.
And Houston High was developed with that in mind as well.
And Houston High was developed with that in mind as well. It's the facilities. It's just going to change that community out there.
So this is kind of a broad question, but there's so many unknowns, except we know it's spring equinox. We know it's fourth quarter. We know things speed up. We know those things, but we don't know about the BSA. We don't know about the borough contribution. We don't know about labor negotiations. We don't know. We have a common lit 360 that's going to be proposed for the new English curriculum materials. We don't know about that. There's a lot of unknowns.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know about staffing. Positions are opening up. People are moving. The chessboard comes alive. So my question is for you, how do you, as superintendent, We tune in every month to see what's going on in the district. How do you, as superintendent, tune in to a district the size of West Virginia to keep your to keep a pulse on what's going on?
Well, I try to go to as many schools as possible a month, a week. We try to do that. And then I rely on the other people in district office who are also doing the same thing. Really our Mondays and Fridays are like go visit school days. We try to do that as much as we humanly can. We started during the pandemic having these regular Zoom meetings with principals because, like, this is an example of you don't waste a good crisis. Like, that was necessitated because of COVID. And then we realized, like, wait a minute, we could just keep doing this as just a touch point with the principals who are there on the ground seeing, you know. So we get that kind of regular group communication opportunity with the leaders in each building. And so it's just visiting with lots of folks, listening to lots of folks, trying to build these opportunities where we can purposefully share what's going on in the district among the leadership. And those are in addition to, like, the traditional, normal, in-person principal meetings that always happened before COVID. And now, in addition to that, we have these other opportunities that didn't exist before COVID.
Do you have a process that you tell principals or you encourage principals for them to remain tuned in?
I don't know if we have a process for collecting information from them. Like, I just think as a matter of course, you know, having been a principal, when you can't help but be tuned in. Like, you live and breathe that school and that community. They're there, you know, like teachers and other staff members. People put in far too much time, and principals are at the top of that list. They're there long before school starts and long after it's over with, talking with all the different stakeholders. And then so we've routinized how during those meetings, like, they have a way to, you know, get things that are concerning to them to us. We call it the parking lot, and they're just put it in the parking lot. And it's a way for them to record things that they're worried about. And when they come up, I think that's been the best part about these meetings. They're just time for administrators to talk about problems or things that they're seeing in the district. It's not the regular, here's our agenda. Like, part of the agenda is, okay, how are things going? That's one of the standing things on the agenda.
Well, we're just about out of time. And we started with good things. Let's end with good things, because in the middle there were so many unknowns. Just what are you excited about for fourth quarter?
I'm excited about a lot.
I was just
trying to decide. So one of the things that I'm excited about is this continuing growing partnership with Shedron State. Mm-hmm. More and more high school kids are getting interested in it, which is what we predicted would happen. And yesterday we kind of had this aha realization, like, when we, you know, when we dreamed up this idea, we said, okay, well, we would let you know May 1st. So we're going to let kids who've applied know May 1st. And then I realized yesterday, like, why are we doing that? Why not just let them know the minute they, like, they could apply in September? So we're going to change that going forward, that there's no need to keep everybody in suspense. Like, if we have a kid who lives in the Valley and wants to be a teacher here, and they know that in September of their senior year, why wouldn't we tell them then?
Right.
So we're going to change that going forward. So I'm excited to see that number grow. I'm excited to see how many CTE courses and internships we end with this year. I'm pretty confident it's going to be more than ever. I'm positive that our AP numbers are going to grow. We won't get the scores till July, but that's exciting because the first tests are coming up that first full week of May and the second full week of May. And then, of course, graduations. They're going to be here before you know it. And that's the coolest part of the job, is going up and watching the kids walk across the stage. I shake all of their hands, and I'm sure I'm just some meaningless face, right, that they've never seen. But it's fun to look out in the crowd and see all the families, and they're all so proud, and the kids have so much hope when they walk across that stage. Like, you feel like, as an old person now, I think I'm getting old, you feel like, yeah, like, the world's in pretty good hands.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is indeed. In good hands, and it's springtime. Thank you, Dr. Trainee. This has been Emily Forstner on Big Cabbage Radio with Inside the District. Stay well out there.
You've been listening to Inside the School District, a weekly discussion providing you with information about what's happening in the Mat-Su schools. This program is a production of Radio Free Palmer, recorded at our studios in Palmer, Alaska. The views and opinions of moderators and guests do not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, the station, or its underwriters. If you have any comments or questions, please email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.